host. I'm Tommy McNeil. Venezuelan opposition leader and self-declared interim president Juan Guaido is offering amnesty to soldiers who back democracy and reject the current Maduro government. Opposition followers handed out leaflets describing the amnesty plans at military and police posts. Some of the soldiers threw away the paper or tore it up. But many Venezuelan military members have said they and their families are tired of the severe shortages of food and other basics of plaguing. Meanwhile, President Nicolas Maduro insisted Sunday the military is on his side as he watched military exercises using Russian-built rocket-propelled grenades and anti-aircraft machine guns. Maduro said he wants peace, but he announced more military games next month, which he says will be the most important in the history of Venezuela. The White House challenged opposition Democrats Sunday to prove they want tough security on the southern border wall with Mexico, now that the longest ever partial government shutdown has ended and the clock is ticking on a 3-week window for negotiations. And there's already talk and concern that there could be a second shutdown. We get more from AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
They're going to try to do in 3 weeks what they can do in 5 weeks.
TSA agent Cairo de Almeida expressed that skepticism just hours after President Trump signed the spending bill reopening those shuttered government agencies until February 15th. Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney was asked on CBS's Face the Nation whether the president is prepared to shut down the government again if Congress doesn't give him the money he wants for a border wall.
Yeah, I think he actually is. Keep in mind, he's willing to do whatever it takes to secure the border.
TSA agent Susan Braverman.
It's demoralizing. It's unfair. It's cruel.
Ben Thomas, Washington.
Australian Defense Minister Christopher Pyne has urged China to resolve tensions in the South China Sea in accordance with international law and not make countries take sides. This is VOA News. Nigeria's government warned off international meddling, insisting the West African country will conduct free, fair elections for the presidency on February 16th. Reacting to criticism by the United States, Britain, and the European Union of President Muhammadu Buhari's suspension Friday of Nigeria's Chief Justice, the president's spokesman defended that decision. The Nigerian federal government, he says, is determined to ensure free, fair elections. This government will not bend to the rules and will not allow meddling in our affairs, according to the spokesman in a statement issued late Saturday. Differing views of the indictment against Trump ally Roger Stone, AP correspondent Mike Hempen.
Stone's indictment charges him with 7 felonies, including witness tampering, obstruction, and false statements. But Stone says he has done nothing wrong.
All I did was take publicly available information and try to hype it to get it as much attention as possible.
Stone has predicted his vindication. However, Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, says prosecutors have a strong case against Stone.
These are very specific allegations of lies and witness intimidation. They're matters that will be easily provable.
Both Stone and Schiff appeared on ABC's This Week. Mike Hemp in Washington.
Philippine authorities now say that the death toll is now at 20 people with dozens wounded after twin bombings at a cathedral. Karen Chamas has details.
Witnesses said the first blast inside the Jolo Cathedral in the provincial capital sent churchgoers, some of them wounded, to stampede out of the main door. Army troops and police posted outside were rushing in when the second bomb went off about 1 minute later near the main entrance, causing more deaths and injuries. The military has been investigating a report that the second explosive device could have come from a parked motorcycle next to the church. No one has immediately claimed responsibility for the latest attack.
Karen Chamas reporting. The death toll from Friday's dam collapse in southeastern Brazil rose to 58 Sunday. A number sure to climb, with more than 200 people feared buried under tons of mud. Rescue operations were briefly halted Sunday, with officials fearing another breach in the dam in the city. Residents were told to get ready to evacuate before the dam was found to be secure. The dam collapsed Friday, sending water and mud over hundreds of mine workers enjoying a lunch break. Rescuers say about 250 miners are missing and they're feared dead. Brazilian judicial authorities have frozen about $3 billion of mining giant Vale's assets since Friday, blaming them for the collapse. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, January 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian President George Weah will deliver his second annual message to the nation today, Monday.
There are several indicators, including indicators from international bodies like the World Bank, the African Development Bank, that has pointed out that the president has performed well.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister, but for some Liberians, the state of the country during the past year was distressing. Kenyan police appeal for help from the public following Saturday's terror-related explosion in Nairobi. And the UNHCR denies distributing army uniforms to Burundian refugees in Tanzania.
Those are fashion in Japan. So knowing that in Tanzania they are not allowed, those materials were immediately removed from the lot that they have received.
Gogo Hakpote is the UNHCR representative in Burundi. And Chad's government shuts down social media for nearly a year amid constitutional change debate. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President George Weah will deliver his second annual message to the nation today, Monday. Weah delivered his first State of the Nation speech last year, January, almost a week after he was sworn in to succeed President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Today's speech comes as many Liberians feel the country is going in the wrong direction. First, there is the missing $16 billion Liberian dollars, rising prices of basic commodities, and what some see as the continuation of official corruption. Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi blames doubts about the Weah government's performance on opposition propaganda. He says some international indicators say that President Weah has performed well.
Firstly, if you look at the amount of propaganda that is being spewed by members of the opposition on social media, it is not the proper barometer to measure the performance of the president. There are several indicators, including indicators from international bodies like the World Bank, the African Development Bank, that has pointed out that the president has performed well. Our economy, the GDP of the country grew from 2.5 to 3.2%. That's progress. The balance of trade deficit has been reduced. So all of the economic indicators say that we are making progress. In some cases, these advances are marginal, but for somebody to say that the economy has slumped is not a realistic review of the actual situation. In addition to that, the president, in spite of some of the inflationary tendencies that happened as a result of the depreciation in the Liberian dollar, has still managed to maintain stability in the price of basic commodities and services. And so you in the media will have to fact check some of the accusations that have been made by the opposition against what the facts are and against what the reality is.
Can you tell us if it is true that the U.S. Embassy in Liberia has submitted to your government the report about its investigation into the so-called missing $16 billion?
It is very laughable, and I think the best way to confirm the absurd accusation from these opposition propagandists, before the Americans, through USAID, funded this investigation at the request of the government of Liberia, the government of the U.S. and the government of Liberia agreed that upon completion of this audit, the results would be made public. So you have to find out from the Americans whether they've submitted any report to us that we are holding back. We want transparency. We know that there is no way that Mr. Weah is culpable or anybody at the highest level of the government will be found culpable. But if they are, the president is prepared to take the necessary actions that the audit will recommend.
Minister, is the government or the ruling CDC, are you ordering people or asking your supporters to come to the Capitol building to support the president?
Well, it's a tradition that some groups, some private citizens, some political party leaders and the ordinary partisans will come around. When former President Sirleaf was in authority, we had UP people wearing their green colors on the grounds of the Capitol, celebrating the success that she will articulate. So it's not anything strange. It's usual that supporters of the president will come and praise him and chant and celebrate because he has made a lot of progress.
I was wondering, so why is the CDC and not the police restricting traffic or movement of people in the city?
But it's totally wrong. The CDC has not restricted traffic. Absolutely not. The National Police have issued some traffic and security regulations. The CDC has not issued any security regulations. Partisans of the CDC themselves will be submitted to national security regulations. So, you know, James, you people in the media will have to help the country, will have to help the world. You know, as a member of the media, we have to fact check these things when you see on social media and not jump to conclusion. The National Police has issued security and traffic regulations that everybody will follow. So for somebody to say that the CDC will be threatening the opposition is totally untrue. We have an environment in Liberia where the democratic space is totally free.
Minister Nabwe, so nice to talk with you always. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia, as Liberian President George Weah delivers his second State of the Nation address today, Monday. Some Liberians are anxiously waiting to hear what he will tout as his achievements. Alexander Cummings is leader of the opposition Alternative National Congress Party. He says Liberians want President Weah to be transparent about the economy, especially about the missing $16 billion Liberian dollars, rising prices of basic commodities, and official corruption.
My assessment is that things are very difficult and very challenging for most Liberians. Prices are up for almost all basic commodities. There is allegations of corruption and stealing, missing $16 billion that is unaccounted for Liberian dollars, $25 million U.S. dollars not accounted for, at least not of yet. So a lot of real concerns about, you know, the direction of the country, concerns about, you know, governance of Liberia. So we're all anxiously waiting to see what the president says at his State of the Nation address.
Let me see. I spoke with the Minister of Information and asked him some of the questions, some of the issues you are raising. First, he said that you, the opposition, are engaged in propaganda and that you think you're still in a campaign mode. He disputes the thing about corruption in the country. He says that whenever it was found out that there was corruption, the government took steps to deal with the corruption.
We should ask him the what specific steps have they taken to deal with the corruption. We should ask them, where is the accounting for the $16 billion Liberian dollars? We should ask them, where is the accounting for the $25 million U.S. dollars? Look, we in the opposition have a right to hold the government accountable. This is not about being in campaign mode. The next campaign is in 2023, 5 years from now. But when we see things going wrong, we have a right and obligation to Liberian people to call these things out. And they need to, as the government in power, to explain to Liberian people, not just to us, why our assertions may be wrong. So this is not about campaigning or about propaganda. It is about accountability. And this is all we want from our government.
So, Mr. Cummings, what have you, the opposition, been up to since the election? Because during the election, many of you went in different directions. Some people blame you, say you did not come together as an opposition. So what have you been up to?
Well, more specifically for the ANC, we've been focusing on reorganizing our party. We are in discussions with the other major political parties about forming an alliance. And so that work is ongoing. We want to do it smartly. We want to first agree what we're going to align around. We want to define what the alliance means. And then we'll communicate to Liberian people how we plan to align. Each political party, though, will keep their identity. But we need to align around common issues like electoral reform.
Alexander Cummings is leader of the opposition Alternative National Congress Party of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Today is Monday, January 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Two people were seriously injured Saturday night after an explosion outside a restaurant in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. According to the police, the blast occurred when a Kenyan was ferrying a luggage on a trolley which was said to belong to a man of Somali origin. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the police have asked citizens to be alert and report any suspicious activity.
As Kenyans were still coming into terms with the Dusit D2 terror attack that robbed the country, 21 of its citizens, following the January 15th attack, they experienced another attack in the central business district of Nairobi, which left two seriously injured. Addressing the media at the scene of the attack, Regional Police Commandant Philip Ndolo confirmed the incident and urged Kenyans to be vigilant on security matters. He said the police suspect it was an attack by an improvised explosive device.
One trolley puller by the name Joseph Okinyi was hired by a Somali gentleman to carry a small box from Latema Road to Kenya Cinema. As they were reaching the junction between Latema and Tomboya, the gentleman pretended to have forgotten his ID and therefore requested the gentleman to stop there, Okinyi to stop there, so that he can dash back to get his ID. It is when Okinyi was still standing there that the box that he was carrying exploded. But we are suspecting an improvised explosive device.
The attack happened a day after the United States of America, through its embassy in Nairobi on Thursday, issued a security alert urging citizens to be on the lookout for any suspicious activity, especially in areas frequented by foreigners. Ambassador Robert Godek dismissed previous reports that the U.S. had prior notice of the January 15th attack on the business complex known as Dusit D2, maintaining that his country will continue supporting Kenya in the fight against terrorism. Regional Police Commandant Ndolo, however, has called on Kenyans to be on the alert for any terror-related information that can help security forces better deal with terrorism.
I want to appeal to members of public to fight this war of terrorism together with us. I would also want to appeal to all the members of public again to give us information at hand whenever they see something that is suspicious, and we'll be able to act with confidence and save the situation.
With 2 weeks alone, Nairobi and other parts of the country have experienced attacks that have frightened not only Kenyans but foreigners alike. George Msamali, a security expert in Kenya, warns that frequent terror attacks in the country, especially Nairobi, will affect the economic stability of Kenya. Msamali says the terrorists are no longer coming from outside the country.
Initially, we used to think that the threat was coming from outside the border, Somali. But you've seen that even the recent attacks at the Dusit, we are finding that we have local players. So it means we have so many sleeper cells in the country. This should be worrying us. Definitely going to hurt our economy.
Police are currently reviewing CCTV footage as part of investigation into the Saturday explosion in Nairobi. So far, no one has been arrested following the attack. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The UN Refugee Agency has denied distributing army uniforms to Burundian refugees in two camps in Tanzania. The Tanzanian government last week said that at least 1,947 army clothes were found in the camps of Unduta and Mtedeli. Moses Havyarimana has the story.
According to Tanzanian government, at least 1,947 army uniforms were found in the two refugee camps in the country to be distributed to Burundian refugees. The UN Refugee Agency representative in Burundi, Gogo Hapkorti, said camouflaged clothes were never distributed in the camps.
Those are fashion in Japan, and normally youth use that kind of clothes. So knowing that in Tanzania they are not allowed, those materials were immediately removed from the lots that they have received.
The UNHCR said in a statement that donors have been informed that clothes made of military-style fabrics are unacceptable and to refrain from supplying such clothes in the future. After the incident, Tanzania's Home Affairs Minister Kangi Lugola suspended five refugee officials for failure to report the presence of the military uniforms.
Kama leo tumeweza kubaini hizi sare za kijeshi.
He says that if today the government was able to find the army uniforms, and if this had been neglected, it may also happen in the future to find firearms in the slots, just because it is aid from the international organizations. Lugola says five refugee officials were suspended pending investigations. The Tanzanian government set up an investigation commission, arguing that the incident may jeopardize the repatriation exercise that has been ongoing since 2017. The UNHCR representative in Burundi, Gogo Hapkorti, said that there were no insecurity concerns of refugees in the Tanzanian camps, despite reports from civil society organizations.
We have always security forces in the camps. This is the same thing we do here. Tanzania does the same thing. It's happened that sometimes there are some insecurity issues. The camp is like a small village. Whatever can happen in the village can happen in the camp. It's just to know how to handle the issue.
A team set up by the Tanzanian government to investigate the alleged distribution of military-type clothing to refugees in Tanzania is expected to release a report on the incident in less than 2 weeks. The government says the incident threatens the relations between Burundi and Tanzania. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The Chadian government has blocked social media for more than 300 days due to political tensions over a possible constitutional change that would allow President Idriss Deby to rule until 2033. Deby has been president of the country since 1990. Ricky Stryak spoke to Julie Owono, executive director of Internet Sans Frontiers, about their campaign to restore connectivity in the country.
So in this case, it's some would say only social media, which are shut down, and messaging apps. But the problem is that in countries like Chad, the internet is basically social media, because basically people don't use the internet anymore. Most people we've spoken to have reported to us that they're not able to interact with their families anymore. They're not able to, they miss opportunities. We've talked with a lot of journalists who missed, you know, sending articles and hadn't seen messages on WhatsApp. I mean, it's a mess for a lot of people. So it's quite dramatic, especially, again, for a country like Chad, where most interactions online happen through social media or messaging applications.
Would you say this is a politically motivated social media blackout?
Absolutely, it is. What we know is that we introduced several legal challenges to the current social media shutdown. Targeted specifically telecommunications operators. We were lucky enough to have the regulator who was summoned by the judges and who presented the government order that the government had sent to telcos to ask them to shut down the internet. And the justification made in that order was we want to preserve national security. But the past patterns in the country have shown that national security is usually concomitant with very tense political debates, including, you know, extending term limits, presidential term limits.
What is your six-month campaign that you're launching this month? How is it addressing this issue?
We have been mobilizing already since March 2018. We've sent letters to the authorities. We've introduced legal challenges. But due to the political environment and the governance environment in Chad, well, the judiciary, which is supposed to be independent, has not always the means to challenge the government. So we thought we would take the mobilization further. Instead of doing a physical demonstration, we did to do an online mobilization, which was quite successful. To allow Chadians to be able to participate, we funded, Internet Sans Frontières funded, the purchase of Wi-Fi hotspots, data bundles to have Wi-Fi hotspots for a lot of people, to allow these people to then use their connectivity and VPN specifically to be able to participate on Twitter and give give a testimony of what they're going through. And it was quite successful. We received a lot of videos.
That was Julie Owono, Executive Director of Internet Sans Frontières. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Paris. Miss Rwanda 2019 was crowned on Saturday after a month-long contest involving 20 beautiful women selected from different backgrounds. This year's contest included an ethnic groups division when one contestant, allegedly from the Hutu ethnic group, got support from many Rwandans. Eugene Uwimana has more from Kigali.
The crowning of Mwiza Meghan on Saturday night as Miss Rwanda 2019 brought to an end the weeks-long contest that stirred debate and public interest. Mwiseneza Rosiane was the story during the 2019 Miss Rwanda contest. She's a Rwandan girl with a punk haircut, modest clothing style, with a toe injured while walking by foot coming to the selection site, no makeup and average height, who allegedly comes from a Hutu family. For many, Josiane seemed not to fit the stereotypes usually conveyed by candidates for Miss Rwanda, normally a beautiful girl with a class and fluent in English. But a large number of politicians, musicians, and journalists supported Mwiseneza because of her self-confidence. On the other hand, her joining the contest unearthed Gwanda's past history of hatred based on ethnic groups. This was reflected as many Gwandans expressed their mixed ideology on different social media platforms. Murikiman Alani Herbert wrote, "This is the time for Hutus to be crowned Miss Gwanda. Ruzian, we are together 100%. The crown has to be yours. It's embarrassing how only Tutsi get voted." Some have even compared Mwiseneza with the mountain gorillas in drownings.
WJ Uwimana reporting from Kigali, Rwanda. Time now for Daybreak Africa. Sporting, here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports from the headquarters of the Confederation of African Football, where the Continental Governing Football Body has changed the kickoff date of the 2019 African Cup of Nations AFCON slated for Egypt. The 24-team tournament, which was initially scheduled for June 14th to July 13th, has now been moved to June 21, with the final set for July 19th in Egypt. The draw is slated for April 12th. In Cairo. In Ghana, the Ghana Football Association organized FIFA CAF integrity course for 150 referees, officially ended at the weekend. All participating referees who were drawn from across the country were taken through a fitness test before the course began. And to Nigeria, where the coach of Nigeria Premier League club Katsina United, Abdullahi Bifo, kidnapped in northern Nigeria on the 7th of January, has been freed. A Katsina police spokesman confirmed that Bifo and three others were abducted 3 weeks ago, and the incident also led to the postponement of the Cup's League's fixture against another Premier League side, Rivers United. Staying with football news, Cameroon's 2019 top-tier domestic championship failed to get underway on Saturday after teams staged a boycott of the opening game at the Yaoundé Military Stadium. The 2018 Cup of Cameroon winners, Edding Sport of Lekki, were set to play Young Sports Academy of Bamenda. They stayed away following a call from the syndicate of elite clubs to boycott the competition amidst a dispute with the head of Cameroon's Professional Football League, Pierre Semiyunge. In handball news, Egypt handball team was defeated by Spain at the 2019 World's Men Handball Championship, missing out on the spot in the Olympic qualification tournament. Egypt had qualified for the main round after finishing third in Group D of the tournament after Sweden and Hungary. They were initially drawn alongside Qatar, Argentina and Angola. However, the Faroes lost their chance to be among the final four as they lost to Denmark, but then end an important victory over Tunisia to qualify to the 7th place playoff. In athletics news, World Cross Country Champion Geoffrey Kamawuro on Saturday edged out Joseph Buert in the thrilling final lap to win his 6th Kenya Police Service Cross Country Championship in the men's 10km title at Ngong Race Course. Kamawuro won the race in 29 minutes and 36.1 seconds. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, January 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello,
sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.